I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to episode 15 of The Story Studio with your hosts, Luke Condor and Daniel Wilcox. Oh yeah, here we go. Check it out now.
Welcome to The Story Studio, a podcast where an independent publishing company explores the world of self-publishing, independent art, and the future of storytelling. It's a show for filmmakers, writers, comic book makers, crowdfunders, entrepreneurs, creators, and anyone looking to tell stories in the modern world. My name is Daniel Wilcox, and today I'm joined by...
Luke Condor with a K.
And our special guest...
Garrett Robinson with an R.
Beautiful. Hey, Garrett. Hi, guys.
Hey, how's it going?
So Garrett Robinson is from Legacy Books. He's the author of the best-selling Nightblade epic fantasy series, a heroic fantasy saga with tens of thousands of avid readers, and the Academy Journals, both set in the land of Underrealm. He's also a YouTube vlogger extraordinaire, filmmaker, and a big-time family man. And he's a cool guy.
Oh, dude.
How's that for an intro?
That's great. Thanks, Luke. You threw the extraordinaire in there. That's what's got me all like, oh, I don't know what to do with that.
Yeah, I was going to put myself as Luke Condor, ordinaire, but...
Can I be Daniel Wilcox? Nah.
Nah. Your thing. What are you guys been up to? What are you working on? What are you creating at the minute? Garrett, what about you?
Oh, man. These days I am working on editing existing books and also planning for the next new book, because there's always a next new book. That's the thing about life, is there is always the next book to work on, which is great.
What about you, Dan?
I am cracking on with edits for They Remain, which I think people probably get bored of at some point. It's every week, it's just more edits, but every week is kind of teaching a new lesson. So I'm about I'd probably say about 60-65% through, and learning about how if you make small changes in the beginning during a second draft, it can affect quite a lot later on, which isn't
by effect. Yeah,
isn't necessarily a bad thing. I think it's going to serve the story a lot better, but it's going really well. I'm at a point where the characters are really flowering and coming up nicely and blooming, and the story's really starting to feel like it's hitting its stride now. It's starting to get to a point where it feels like it knows what it is. So, yeah, exciting doing that, those kind of edits.
And I'm basically doing the opposite of you. The same, but the other book. We talk about it every single week. We say we're doing more of the thing we were doing last week.
What edits? We're just further along.
Yeah. Garrett, you've recently moved from LA, right? Where else did you move to?
Oregon. I moved into a small town called Lafayette, which is just south of Portland. If anybody knows Oregon, they probably know Portland. And finally got out of Los Angeles. I literally lived my entire life in that city, other than traveling. But I've never had permanent residence anywhere else. And you know, I'm here. It's the end of November, and winter is almost. You could say winter is coming.
And I was waiting for it.
Yeah, there's no Los Angeles doesn't have winter. I've never had this before. I've never had places where, you know, the leaves change and it gets cold and it rains all the time. It's great. I love it.
You get used to it pretty quickly. I'll tell you, in Manchester, we had a sunny morning and I was like, this is amazing. The sun, oh, and it's raining again.
Was that today?
Always raining. Yeah, it was today. Yeah.
Yeah, we had exactly the same here. It was glorious in the morning, and then it just shat it down. So
I actually do like having weather. I like that it gets. it makes you appreciate the sunny days a lot more.
Yeah.
When spring starts, it's my favorite season because you're cold for so long, and you walk outside, the sun's out, and you press your face into it. It's beautiful. It's absolutely amazing.
People keep saying, "Oh man, you'll get sick of Oregon weather real quick," and I'm waiting. It hasn't happened yet. I still love it. They keep every time they see me, they're like, "Okay, you sick of the rain yet? You sick of?" I'm like, "No, you don't understand. 30 years. Yeah. I've been living in a place that's always hot and always sweaty and always. I like it, and I think it's going to be a while before I get tired of it.
It's weird. What's the coldest that it gets in LA?
I mean, you know, one time in my life it got below freezing. Right. One time in my life. That's it. It never snows. It rains 4 days out of the year. Most of the time, an average like cold snap is like and of course, this is Fahrenheit because I'm sure that you guys are on Celsius. But, you know, most of the time, a really cold night is 55 degrees Celsius, which is Fahrenheit, which is like. Let me see if I can do this. About like 20 degrees. No, 15
that
degrees
Celsius. That sounds pretty warm. That's a nice day.
Yeah.
That's like mid-summer.
Yeah.
10, 15 degrees Celsius, I think. Somewhere in that range.
Okay. It's weird because I know a lot of writers who like desperately want to move to LA.
Yeah, of
I don't
course.
Know many writers who want to move out. But I mean, I'm guessing the quality of life is better. It's quieter. You find it helping your writing?
Absolutely. Yeah, I can, you know, in Los Angeles, you go for a walk and you feel like you're smoking a cigarette because it's so dirty and the air is so, you know, filthy and everything. Up here, I go for a walk and I walk for 5 minutes and I'm in farmland. You know, I'm out walking brilliant green rolling hills. I mean, it looks like a fantasy novel up here. You know, as soon as you get away from the homes that are obviously very modern, you are in forests and green rolling hills, and it's just it's really incredible. And like you said, the quality of life is amazing. Right down the road is a town called McMinnville, which is basically like, for anybody who is familiar with Los Angeles, McMinnville is like if you took Silver Lake, which is this total like little hipster district, and you removed it from Los Angeles and you just had it be its own town. So there's lots of crazy kooky little restaurants with lots of great craft beer on tap. There's all these bars with tremendous personality. There's a big art community there. It really is a pretty amazing, magical place, honestly. Not to make it sound too frou-frou, but it's pretty frou-frou.
I think that would be my big worry about moving to out of a city into like my hometown is Mansfield, which is a tiny little town, is that you sort of feel like you're gonna lose out on the culture, like the art culture and the artisan culture. But it sounds like you've hit on a good one.
Yeah, no, it's definitely pretty great. And I think that that's definitely true. I think that you can miss out on that. And there certainly was an art community in Los Angeles, but it's, as an art community, it can be hard to access, especially if you have a family, right? So for us to have the sort of house with the sort of space that we wanted for our kids and to be able to afford that, we had to live so far out of the center of the city that it was an hour and a half drive to get to where the artists would hang out, right? Well, it takes me an hour and 10 minutes to drive to Portland, to right into the middle of Portland. And meanwhile, and you can go to Portland if you want to hang out at like the cool bars and the cool cafes and stuff. But right here, you know, there are people who do photography, there are filmmakers, there are other writers, and it's all right here in this sort of community. So we had to look hard to find, you know, this place, but I really do think they exist. You know, the outskirts of Austin is another great place. That was another place we were thinking about moving, is the outskirts of Austin. You're not in the city, but Austin has so much art and so much creativity going on in it without all of Los Angeles's like cutthroat, you know, cynicism and all that sort of thing. I'm kind of at a stage in my life where I'm very over cynicism, especially with things that are going on in the world today. It's very easy to be cynical, and I need a break from that. I live that stuff day in, day out, and I need to surround myself with people who believe that things can be a little bit better than they are.
Yeah. So you're happy?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 100% happy with the move. Kids are in a great school, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Sorry, Dan, what were you about to say?
No, I was just going to say, so it's a lot more of an easy, accessible art culture. It's less, like you say, cutthroat. It's more, I guess, respect. In smaller communities, you tend to find that people are a lot more respectful and encouraging. And it's the same. I live in Lincoln in England, and I kind of, it's that balance between small city and rural county. And it's everyone's just supportive. Everyone's just, no one's treading on each other's toes. They're just a nice place to be.
Yeah, I don't think anybody goes to McMinnville thinking that that's where they're going to become the next Steven Spielberg. You know what I mean? And when that's what everybody in Los Angeles is trying to do, there can be only one Steven Spielberg, you know? So everybody goes all Highlander about it, and they feel like they're competing with each other. Whereas, you know, here in Lafayette and McMinnville, people legitimately just sit down and they go, how can I paint a better painting? How can I write a better book? Who can I talk to about how to do it all better? And, you know, again, I don't want to completely trash Los Angeles. There are a lot of people there who do just care about being creative and doing what they love. And I was part of a community of amazing filmmakers who that is their deal. They want to make film, make better film, and they're all great people who are awesome to work with. They just aren't the norm. Like, that group formed because everyone in it was so sick of the way that Los Angeles is more generally.
Yeah. Cool. We should probably move on to Big Whoops soon. So,
what a big whoop.
Dan, have you got anything you've seen, done, smelled?
Yeah. Definitely smelled, but I'll save that for another time. But, no, my big whoop for the week will be, have you guys heard of, I mean, I presume Garrett probably will more than you, Luke, Hamilton.
Oh my God,
I've listened to it, and I know it's opening in London soon, so I'm going
to
go watch it.
This is my thing, so I'm trying to find a way to get myself tickets, because I've kind of, my partner's dad's girlfriend introduced me to it a couple of months ago, just like a couple of videos of, you know, Lin-Manuel Miranda at the White House doing his thing, and it's only the last week I've literally put on the track about, well, the album, just too many times to count, but I'm kind of being nice to myself. Well, I should probably just explain to people who don't know what it is, but it's basically a musical show that is kind of taking America by storm, if I'm right in saying that. It's one
You're
of
absolutely
loads of Tony's
correct.
And awards. And it's based around was he a founding father?
He was, yes.
He was, yeah. Alexander Hamilton, one of the founding fathers, who you can find on the $10 bill. And just his life and his journey kind of put into hip hop and music and R&B and dance. And it seems like a very modern contemporary take on what is essentially an overlooked story. And not only is the story kind of just grabbing from my heart, I don't know why, I just seem to really, really be attracted to the story, but the music in it is phenomenal, and it's got
so
rapping
good.
And I'm just a massive fan of rap. But the only thing, so I've only listened to the first three tracks from the album, because I don't want to ruin the show.
You want to savor it.
No. No, I will tell you this, and this was told to me by somebody else before I ever listened to Hamilton. You should listen to the entire thing as often as you possibly can, because what you don't want, and this is how it was described to me, what you don't want is you don't want to go to the show and be sitting in the audience and be trying to interpret trying to understand what they're saying. Right.
Okay.
You want to know what they're saying so that you can see how they perform around what they're saying. Now, I haven't seen the show yet myself, but I gave the exact same reason that you gave. And they were like, no. You want to know the words forwards and backwards so that when you see what they do with the words, with the lines of dialogue, you can interpret it that way. Because the other thing is that you will probably hear cheering, and you will probably hear people singing along, and you will probably I know it's London, and I know that's a little bit less cool over in the UK, but when you have
happiness,
no, I mean, you know, reacting during the performance in the movie, I know that it's not quite as much of a cultural thing there, but here you won't be able to understand the words, so you know, the guy playing Hamilton will say a thing and everybody will stand up and cheer, and you'll be like, what did he say? I don't know. I can't understand so that would be my personal recommendation.
Okay. I guess there's something in that. Cause I went to go see Wicked with my partner, and she made me listen to the entire soundtrack before that. And there were elements of those songs where, as it came to the show, you kind of interpret more and you understand more about what's behind the text. And I'll always remember, have any of you guys seen Wicked?
No.
I have not seen it.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a line in it where it's basically a girl, she sings about how this guy won't go out there because she's in a chair. And I listened to this line and I was like, well, that seems really like out of order. Why wouldn't he go out with someone because they're in a chair? And you go and see the show and it's actually because she's in a wheelchair. But bits like that you kind of miss out on.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It makes a bit more sense, but not that I have anything against that.
So one of my favourite memories in London was going to see the Book of Mormon. And yes. I knew that soundtrack pretty much back to front, but being there and seeing it and seeing the way they told the jokes and the way they interpreted jokes was what made it, I think. It's such a... I'm jealous. I really want to go see Hamilton as well. I think I'm a bit of a musical lover, but I've not seen enough.
We should go together, Luke.
Yeah. Garrett, do you want to come to the UK?
Yeah,
absolutely. Oh, man. Yeah, that's the other thing is now that we're here, you know, things are so much less expensive than they were in Los Angeles. Like, we are thinking that we can start traveling sort of again for me, but, you know, really for the first time with Meg, and we're looking forward to it. So I'll come out. I'll watch Hamilton with you guys in London. That'd be great.
Yeah, that'd awesome. Gary, have you got a big whoop that you want to share with us?
Well, I'll jump off of that and say that Lin-Manuel Miranda, the guy who wrote Hamilton, is releasing over time what's called the Hamilton mixtape. And so it's songs from the play, and they are remixed and performed by really big contemporary music artists. Like Sia has a track on there. Busta Rhymes has a track on there. Not the biggest contemporary music artist, but, you know, we know who he is. And it's Kelly Clarkson has a song. It's really, really great. I actually don't like any of the remixes as much as the original, which is weird, because I don't generally like musical theater and I do generally like rap and hip hop, but the original really got to me in a way. But the mixes and everything are really great, really fantastic. I'm now learning sort of the new words. The way a lot of the songs are the same, but a lot of them are, you know, rap remixes and everything like that. So I'm learning the new words and everything. So if you're out there listening and you enjoy Hamilton, you will probably enjoy the Hamilton mixtape as well.
Cool. Mine's a bit of a selfish one. The other stories hit 200,000 downloads, which is a bit of a nice milestone to hit.
Nice.
It's one of those cool things where you start something like that, like a little project, and it wasn't even supposed to be a podcast. It was just going to be like a little short story collection we did, but then it just sort of takes off. You know, you find its own little fan base, and it sort of becomes its own monster. And I want to drink a bit of coffee to 200,000 downloads.
Yes. I'll have some blackcurrant squash.
I have zero liquids around me, but, you know.
As well as some saliva.
I will say that I am, you know, however many episodes of it there are, I'm that many downloads. I'm a listener.
Oh, really? Oh, wicked.
Hey. Yeah.
Nice. So speaking of writing and publishing, Gary, why don't you start off by telling us a little bit about, like, what was the first story you published? And we'll go from there and just see where we go.
Yeah. So the first story I published was a sort of little psychological sort of sci-fi thriller, but contemporary. It wasn't. It's not space opera or anything like that. It was called the Touch Trilogy, and it was a small trilogy of novellas. And it was about a girl living in Los Angeles, and she has this power that she doesn't understand, where when she touches people's skin, she can see their thoughts, and it is it's not very pleasant. It's very sort of invasive and everything like that. And this was an idea that I'd had for a movie that I'd originally written as a screenplay, because before I was an author, I was a working film person who was trying to become a filmmaker. You know, I was working on crews and everything like that, but I wanted to and still want to direct. And it's basically impossible to become a film director. You know, it just is statistically not really a thing that you can just sort of do. So when I started writing, I started with the intention of turning my screenplays and my film ideas into books that I would then turn into bestsellers, that I would then walk into a film pitch meeting and be like, I have a script that's based on a best-selling book. that I also have the rights to because I wrote it. And that is very attractive, you know, to a film producer. So that was my first, story that was based off of a script that I had already written. And it did way more than I thought it was going to. And that was sort of how the whole thing began.
Are you, could you read it? Are you happy to read it now? Or when you look back at that, the way.
Oh, no, published, no, no. No. No, no.
So you're a film screenwriter originally?
Yes.
Or is that how you got into writing? Or how
no.
did you start, when did you first put pen to paper to tell a story?
Yeah, the first put pen to paper was I was a teenager and I was writing Warhammer 40,000 fan fiction.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Wow, wow.
Did you play?
I played Blood Angels originally, but then I got really into Speed Freaks. But all of my fan fiction was Blood Angels. I mean, Mephisto is basically the greatest character in Warhammer 40K. So I wrote so many stories about Mephisto, and Tychus was in there. And yeah, I was a little bit crazy about 40K. I spent many thousands of dollars of my parents' money on figures and everything, and I was kind of into it. I added it up one time, and I think I wrote about 500,000 words while I was in high school of fan fiction.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, which was only marginally better than it, I'm losing the metaphor, but it wasn't good. It was all bad. It was all very, very bad. But still, that's 500,000 words of practice, you know?
Yeah.
Is that where some of your inspiration comes from? Because I know that you tend to center around fantasy now.
Yeah.
Did it all kind of originate from the Warhammer?
I mean, I was always much bigger into Warhammer 40K than Warhammer fantasy. My thing with fantasy starts when, you know, I read The Hobbit for the first time. And I think my dad gave me that when I was 8. And then he gave me Lord of the Rings when I was 11, and I still have the copy that he gave me. It's a big old single volume hardcover. You guys can see it here, but audio listeners won't be able to listen. This is the same copy. And ever since he gave it to me when I was 11, I've read it once a year ever since. So I've read it almost 24 times. Well, I've read it about 19-20 times now. And I'm obsessed with it. I think that it is something that will never be matched, if for no other reason than it was the first of its kind. You know what I mean? Yeah. I don't think there will ever be a better fantasy book than Lord of the Rings. I think that we can only try to take it and take it to like the next level. But when people claim it used to really tick me off when I saw on the cover of the Wheel of Time, the first book in the Wheel of Time series, which was Eye of the World, was it? But right on there, on the front cover, it says like better than Tolkien. I was like, no, screw you. Like, screw you. You literally can't write a fantasy book that's better than Tolkien because the book wouldn't exist without Tolkien. You know what I mean? So
is that the tagline? It's a strange tagline.
Yeah.
I feel like if you're in a theater now, everyone would just get up and just go.
Yeah.
I think that it was a blurb, right? Like some other author had said that, and they were just, and so they just go, oh, well, we're just quoting somebody who said that. And it's like, well, screw you. But of course I now use that marketing tactic myself. I run Facebook ads where the line is, you know, like better than Robert Jordan. And it says, you know, down below that, like this Amazon reviewer said that these books are better than Robert Jordan. And I'm like, hey, I'm just quoting somebody, you know, that's just what they said. No.
Would you say that is like the first milestone publishing the trilogy of novellas? That would be like the first milestone in your publishing. I'm going to call it empire now. Your publishing empire.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that was the first thing that I ever published that made that earned any money whatsoever. And it's the sort of thing where I published it, and in that first month, I think I earned $300, which is not that's not a career at all. But when I was expecting it to make like $20, that was to me that was amazing. That was incredible. So
what do you think hit the success for that? What do you think it was that made that original surge?
I mean, I come from a middle-class white family in America, so I just happen to know lots of people who, when I put out a book and I say it's $3, you know, 100 people will go and buy it because that's not a big deal to them, and they want to show. I know that everybody who bought Touch when I first published it didn't read it, you know? And at the time I was okay with that. At the time, that was most of my marketing, was talking to friends and family. And it wasn't until I realized, oh no, I need to find actual people who read books, that I actually started to, you know, be able to make a living at it.
Yeah. So you published those, and then there was Non-Zombie, which was that the one after that, or
yeah,
and that was a random idea. So was it another Garrett had that idea, or how did that work?
It was a Gareth. So at the time, I still listen to the self-publishing podcast, and I used to write in and leave voicemails for them all the time. And there was somebody else who called in and left a voicemail, or maybe sent them an email. I don't remember. And they came up with the idea of a zombie that – I think they just came up with the idea of a zombie that retained its intelligence after becoming a zombie. And I had always said that I would never write a zombie book. And I was – at that time, I was thinking – let's never say never, and let's try to like test ourselves as an artist and find a zombie story that we could write. And so I heard that that idea, and when it was given, it was very explicitly said in the email, in the voicemail, if you or somebody else wants to write this, go ahead, because I never actually will. So I took that idea, and then I took Zombieland and Shaun of the Dead, which are movies that I love.
Fantastic.
And I was like, yeah. So I said, okay, so let's write a story, because it would be very easy to take that same premise and write it as a very serious, very horror story. But I don't like that. I don't like horror. I don't like zombies. I don't like any. I just, that's not my thing, which I don't understand why I continue to listen to your podcast, The Other Stories, because that clearly says that I do like horror.
Yeah.
Anyway, but yeah, so that's just not my thing. It's not my genre. But I decided if I could write a horror comedy. And so I did. And so I wrote Non-Zombie. And it was a lot of fun. It just wasn't fun enough to make me keep going in that direction. I was like, okay, I did that. It was fun. Let me keep experimenting and find what I actually want to do.
I think your ability to just test the water, feel confident in doing that and just trying things is possibly one of the things that's helped you towards your success you have today. I mean, if you'd agree with that, I don't know. But because I've been watching I remember when you were just published Nightblade episode one, I think it was called at the time.
Yeah.
And now it's just been lovely to see the changes you've made, the different covers, the new editing, the way you've brought out like five or six more books since then in that series. It's kind of crazy to see. And I think that, would you put that down to your just ability to just publish and write and publish and just keep iterating, for lack of a better term, iterating and optimizing to the success you've had?
Yeah, I think that, and this is the number one piece of advice that I give people who are just starting out, not just in writing, but really in anything artistic, is one, you have to, like, the first thing is you have to acknowledge that that there is a business side of it. If you try and say, oh, I don't want to do the business side, well, then, like, fine. I mean, that just means that you won't be successful. Whether you want to be traditionally published or whether you want to be independently published, if you want to publish yourself, there is a business side to it. And people love to pretend that if you get traditionally published, then like you don't have to worry about the business side of it. Well, if you get traditionally published and you don't worry about the business side of it, you will not be successful, right? Like you still most of the time have to do most of your own marketing. And getting into traditional publishing is the business side of it. You have to network. You have to meet people. You have to know how to promote yourself to. You just have to promote yourself to an agent, an editor, and a publisher, rather than the actual people who are going to read your book. So that's one thing is acknowledging that no matter what, if you want to be a successful artist, you have to acknowledge the business side of it. And then two is study every single thing you can get your hands on about how to do it and try everything. And not everything will work, but only by trying everything will you find the things that do work for you. For example, blogging doesn't work for me. Twitter, as a promotional vehicle, doesn't work for me. That doesn't mean they don't work. That just means they don't work for me. Email works for me, and YouTube works for me, as well as, you know, like continuing to follow. But like, nonfiction doesn't work for me at all. Obviously, nonfiction works great for the self-publishing podcast guys. You know, that is the foundation of their success, is the self-publishing podcast. Same with Joanna Penn. She was, you know, both the self-publishing podcast guys and Joanna Penn found success as fiction authors, turned that into nonfiction, and then nonfiction was like their springboard. And of course, my early business model was do literally whatever Johnny, Sean, and Dave are doing. So I tried to form a nonfiction podcast. I tried to get in on that game, but I don't like that game. I don't have any fun with it, and I don't bring anything good or new to it. So I abandoned that, and I don't plan on continuing to go that route. I only want to continue doing the fiction and doing my business side of it, which doesn't include necessarily, you know, becoming an instructor. If anything, I want to be a mentor, not an instructor. And I think that there is a very sort of key difference between those things.
So we were talking about that before you managed to get on with you, Garrett. If we do find any success for anything, I don't want to be spending my time instructing and teaching people. I just want to be writing good stories and making films and that sort of thing. I think we're very in line with our thinking in that, I think.
Yeah.
Just creating worlds, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't actually mind the, how do I put this? I guess I don't mind teaching a person. I do mind teaching people. And that's the difference to me, is the podcast thing. That's not appealing to me. Writing a book about how to write and publish, that's not appealing to me. But I do have, I know, Luke, you know about it. I do have my Writer Wednesday thing. That is me specifically, that's talking to a person. Like every, what I want that series to be is every single video is a person who's like, dude, here's the specifics of my situation. What do I do? And I answer that person. And hopefully that helps more people than just that person. Hopefully other people glean information and learning from that. But I want to work with a person with a specific, rather than, I don't want to write another indie publishing 101 book, because those books are freaking everywhere. We don't need another one. I can't bring anything new to that space, but I can help one person. You get what I mean?
Yeah. I'm sorry, Dan, go on.
I was going to say, it's interesting that you found that point where you know what works for you and you know what doesn't. And it's one of the things that I think a lot of people struggle with. And I know that part of the reason, and I feel almost bad saying this, part of the reason that I hadn't got around to reading any of your fantasy books. I mean, I'm a massive fan of fantasy. I'm huge on Tolkien. Last year I was reading some Peter V. Brett and some of the Painted Man. And just when I got into writing, it was all about writing fantasy, but I write better in horror. So I find that I make sure that I'm reading horror so that I can kind of keep those ideas fresh, keep that kind of rhythm going, and get familiar with the genre.
Right.
And it's only sort of this week that I've got into your Nightblade series.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. if you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And downloaded it and started reading it to kind of give myself a bit more of a outside perspective of the things that I write in. But I was going to say, so when Nightblade was originally published, it came out as episode one.
Yeah.
Did you originally know at that point that it was going to be a series? I mean, do you have an idea of how long it's going to be? How far you're going to stretch the story now?
Yeah. I mean, the idea for Nightblade happened when I had just spent 8 months writing my book Rebel Yell, and Rebel Yell is straight up genreless, what you would call literary fiction. It's set in contemporary times. It is written about there is no horror, there is no sci-fi. It is literally just a novel written to make a point about something that I was observing, and I am still in terms of the writing itself, the analogies, the story, and the point I was trying to make, I'm actually still prouder of Rebel Yell than anything else that I've ever done. It's just that I can't write Rebel Yell every time. You know what I mean? I'm Yes. just starting to get another idea for my next book that I want to do like that. And that idea has maybe been catalyzed by certain world events, which we won't get into, but I can't do that every single time. So I had just finished Rebel Yell. It was getting ready for publishing. I was exhausted and I wasn't feeling very great about myself. And my wife pointed out that I used to write like a crazy person and publish all the time. Because before Rebel Yell, I had been writing another fantasy series that had been serialized and episodic. And so I was releasing an episode, you know, every few weeks or every week when I was in the thick of it. And she said, yeah, you need to get back to getting things done so that you feel good about the things that you've accomplished, because you've gone 8 months without accomplishing anything. Not that you haven't done anything, but you haven't gotten a done. So I said, you're right. And I sat down with the Nightblade with this idea that I'd been stewing on. This is actually Underrealm is actually my oldest story idea. It was a film idea. Then it was a series idea that I was going to try and shoot myself. And then it was this thing. When I first started writing, I sat down and I tried to write the first Underrealm book. I got 10,000 words in and I was like, this is terrible. This is so bad. It's so bad. I'm not ready to do this yet. So I wrote Touch, which was a much simpler story. I wrote Non-Zombie. I wrote Realm Keepers. I wrote Touch. I wrote Non-Zombie. I wrote Hit Girls. I tried to write the first Underrealm book again, and I was like, no, this is still really bad. Then I wrote Realm Keepers. I wrote Rebel Yell. And then I started writing. And then I came to this point, and Megan, my wife, was like, you gotta start producing. And so I gave Underrealm another crack, and I wasn't ready yet. I knew I still wasn't ready yet to write the big story. And so I decided to take a much smaller story set in the same world and start with that. And that's when I came up with Lauren, the dagger, the whole plot line, the general idea of the whole plot line. And the more I thought about it, and the more I related her story to the bigger story that I wanted to tell, the more I realized I couldn't just have a series of five or six books and be done with it. I wanted to tell the story of the life of someone in Underrealm. And that is why the name of the series being the Nightblade Epic is very deliberate. It really isn't the Nightblade series, because epic used to mean something as a noun. Like, everybody uses it as an adjective now. Oh, that movie was epic. Oh, that book was epic. That story was so epic. That's not what epic meant. One of the first fantasy stories, one of the first stories, period, ever told is the Epic of Gilgamesh. And that story is literally his entire life. It begins with his birth and it ends with his death, you know? The Odyssey is an epic. The Iliad and the Odyssey together are an epic. And The Iliad tells the story of years and lots of things happening. And the Odyssey tells the story of years, and it follows Odysseus almost all the way to the end of his life. And to me, that is Nightblade. So the Nightblade epic begins the story of Underrealm only because it's the first story that I'm telling in the world. But it's going to continue. It's going to go on. Other stories in Underrealm are happening. The Academy Journals, other series that are going to be coming out in the future. All of those are going to be series. And at some point they will end, but Nightblade will go on. I plan to keep writing that until the end of the life of the main character. And that is so exciting to me. Like, that got me so pumped and excited to create this world that she was going to exist in, and to create her as a character, and to just sort of put it all together. And that has been the impetus for everything that has come since.
Yeah. So after you published episode one, were you feeling that sense of accomplishment again? Were you writing as fast and as crazily as you were before?
Yeah, definitely. And I was getting really... I was just really excited about the potential of it, you know what I mean? And it was not originally the plan to have so many series set in Underrealm. And that happened just as I was finishing Nightblade, when I came up with it came up in developing the world, because near the end of Nightblade, I was starting to plan for the next book. I was starting to set things in motion at the end of Nightblade for the next book. And that was when I came up with the Academy, which is where wizards learn how to be wizards. And as soon as I came up with the Academy, I knew that I wanted to explore it, but it didn't make sense for Lauren to explore it. She's not a wizard. Like, what the hell would she do there? So that was when I came up with the idea for the Academy Journals. And then I started coming up with other creatures that live in Underrealm and the mystical side of things and monsters and all that sort of thing. And that's when I came up with the series of Tales of the Wanderer, which is the third Underrealm series that's going to launch and everything. And so that's sort of how it grew from there. And it was sometime during the middle of Mystic that I realized that I wanted to bring in other authors and other creatives into the world too. And now that is finally a thing that's happening. And I'm very, very excited about it. We really are creating like our own little like Marvel universe for fantasy. And I'm pretty stoked.
Yeah, that does sound very cool.
Do you want to tell us a little bit more about that? Because that sounds just like a fantastic, I guess, experiment in a way. But I mean, how are you kind of approaching it? Are you setting parameters that these people are going to exist in, or are you kind of just saying this is the world, run free?
Yeah, I'm trying to do a combination of both. So I know you guys are pretty big comic fans, but are you Marvel fans specifically? Are you like aware of what Marvel?
So I'm a Marvel person. I recently got into a bit more DC, but I'm completely Marvel through and have been for years. So yes.
I appreciate Marvel, but I'm not thorough.
Okay. So Marvel has a guy, I think I forget what his post is exactly, but his name is Brian Michael Bendis, and he is a comic creator, and he is the guy behind all of the best stuff Marvel has done for years and years now. For those who don't know, you know, the movie Captain America Civil War is based off of one of Bendis's early accomplishments, which is the Civil War storyline in Marvel Comics. And this that was him going, okay, this big universe-shattering thing is going to happen, and we are going to build everyone's storylines towards it. So the Spider-Man team, the people writing Spider-Man, were still free to create their Spider-Man storylines, but Bendis sat them down and he was like, here's where we're going, and here's what your stories need to point to. Like, we need to have things in your stories that lead to Civil War. And he did the same thing with Captain America, Iron Man, the Avengers, X-Men, everybody. Everybody was pointing towards Civil War. So everybody still gets their own creativity, but it is, everything also serves a larger narrative. So I am now officially, okay, so there are three different series now. One is going to be written by a pair of authors writing under a pseudonym, and they are already coming up with their story idea. Like, that is actually happening right now. With another author, I am talking with her, and we are still in the earliest stages of her kind of deciding what her story is going to be at all. And then there's a third author who I basically am going to meet with decently soon and sort of pitch the whole idea to him. He's a great writer. I've known him for a number of years, and I really want him to be a creator in there. So, and again, I want them, I'm trying to bring a diversity to the genre of fantasy that just frankly doesn't really exist. None of the other writers, at least for a while, are straight white men like me, right? Because that's all fantasy is. That doesn't mean that the authors are bad people or that they're prejudiced. I might have a personal opinion that Robert Jordan is, but whatever, that has nothing to do with it. It's just that it's the exact same guys writing the exact same stories over and over again. I might fall prey to that myself a little bit, but I'm at least trying. Like, I recognize my own biases and I'm trying, and I want to bring in other people with other diverse life experiences and be like, what story do you want to tell? And then how can we fit that into the overall narrative? Because I really do think that that will make the whole experience better, because they are going to approach the same big world-shattering event in a completely different way, because they just think about the world differently than I do.
Here's how you're doing this better than Marvel is doing it. Because Marvel is it's a straight white male writers, the same. They're all in their 50s now. Barry Michael Bendis, not Hickman anymore, but a few different guys. And they've started to play with the characters. So instead, Tony Stark is dead now. Sorry for the spoilers. They've got a young black girl who's becoming Ironheart, who's taking his place. Thor is now a woman. They're doing all of these things to try and make their universe more inclusive, which is great. But it's the same people writing these characters.
Exactly.
So the opinions are like, it's already been like in the subreddits I go to, people are already saying that character wouldn't talk like that. That's
exactly
not their experience anymore. So I think the way you're doing it is a lot more authentic.
Yeah, and I read, on a related note, I just have to say, I read this great article the other day about somebody who went to college for fashion and design, and they're like, Marvel, fashion has advanced. Please stop drawing every single female character in shirts that come right under their boobs and pants that hang off of their hips. That was cool in the early 90s. It isn't cool anymore. Nobody dresses like that. I get that that's when you were a teenager and you still think that's the hottest look for a girl to have. But women have evolved and we don't necessarily dress for you anymore. And like, that's a silly little issue on one hand, but it's also reflective of the idea that like, if you actually like kind of observed or like let other viewpoints into your small, tiny world, you might not keep doing the same thing over and over again. Maybe, I don't know, crazy thought.
I think the problem with like professional comic book writing is that it's a very small pool of people who have those jobs and they are not going to let them go.
Right. Like, exactly.
Like, but I think they need to. I think those guys should move on and do it, like produce their own independent works with Image or someone like that. And they need to get different viewpoints, like what you're doing.
Well, the thing is that people need to graduate up, right? Like, like Brian Michael Bendis needs to graduate up and have somebody else come in to be the new Marvel head of story who sets the pace and does the thing. And then when they come up against a problem that they don't understand, they can go to Bendis and be like, how do you wrangle... How do you wrangle the writers on the Guardians of the Galaxy comic? That team is a bunch of assholes. And he's like, yeah, let me tell you how to deal with them. Like, that's the sort of thing where like his experience and whatnot, and he needs to graduate and let somebody else take his spot. And that is a long-term goal of mine. I just kind of need to get everything actually like happening first, because nobody else but me has a published book in the world, right? But that is something that I think is sort of missing, is a graduation system, a sort of social mobility within the arts culture. And I also think that we don't apprentice anymore. I think that every artist should apprentice, and that is like, not that they're going to like be my apprentices, but everybody who I bring into Legacy and publish their books and whatnot, I want to offer that sort of guidance on, because like I have a ton of advantages and privileges as, you know, like as a straight white dude, and that like those advantages and privileges have enabled me to learn things that other people can't even necessarily learn. They gave me all my opportunities with, with marketing and publishing and meeting people and making contacts. I need to pass those on. I need to take, you know, my creators who are not the same races, genders, sexualities as me, and pass on those, what I've learned, and also my contacts. Be like, hey, this is my friend, you know, Joe Blow, and he's great, and you should totally advertise his books as well, like that sort of thing. And I just don't see that happening in the traditional industry very often.
Yeah.
So to flip it on its head a little bit, is there a part of you that worries about, I know obviously bringing other writers in and diversifying the world that you've created has its advantages, but is there a part of you that worries about someone going a direction that maybe you hadn't foreseen, that you might not necessarily, as a creator who built this world, might not like? Is there a part of you that has any reservations in that aspect?
I mean, you know, they're not allowed to have a meteor come out of nowhere and destroy Underrealm, right? Like, I have creative control, like, to that degree. I have purposely left a lot of the world of Underrealm kind of unexplored. I've made some broad generalizations and said these are the things that are generally true about this kingdom or that kingdom or the other kingdom, but I haven't really, I want them to explore. If somebody wants to, I mean, I'm not going to have a problem if somebody wants to create a society that with sexual norms or ideas about things that aren't my idea, that aren't my ideas. Like, that's kind of the point. I'm trying to create a world. So one big thing about Underrealm, just as an example, bigotry just doesn't exist. It just doesn't exist. There is no racism. There is no sexism. There is no transphobia. There is no nothing. That sort of stuff just doesn't exist. Now, I still accidentally, like, sort of let things slip. Somebody pointed out to me one time, you know, I like what you're doing with Underrealm, but I can tell, before I even knew who you were or met you, I could tell the book was written by a white dude. I was like, oh, okay, because I'm trying not to have racism be a thing. And they were like, no, I see what you're doing here, but here's why, is you only described people's skin colors when they weren't white. I was like, oh, shit. Dang, never thought of that. So then that was a thing that I thought of, and I actually went back and fixed Nightblade, you know, to incorporate that. And then I that was a thing that I thought. So stuff like that sneaks in. But in general, I am trying to imagine this. It's not a utopian society by any means. There's still class. There's still this. There's still that. There's still war, conflict. I'm just like, yeah, I'm just positing this idea that a human society could exist where it doesn't matter the color of your skin or what dangles or doesn't between your legs or how you choose to identify yourself. And so, like, people aren't allowed to violate that, because that's the point, right? Like, that is the whole point of the thing. And if they don't get that, then we just need to have a conversation until they do. And if they want to create a fantasy story, like nobody who comes to write a book series in Underrealm for Legacy Books is, like, precluded from doing their own stuff. We're not, like, hiring them as staff writers and we own everything they create. We're literally hiring them, like, okay, here's your story and you're going to create it. And it exists in Underrealm, and it kind of, like, follows the bare minimum rules. But within that, I'm trying to give them as much creative freedom to tell the sort of stories that I wouldn't even think to tell. You know what I mean? In other words, let me summarize it this way. Underrealm is not a place to tell your story of overcoming transphobia, let's say. That just, it's not the right place to tell that story. It is instead the place to tell a story where a trans person just is and exists and lives their life, and to assist trans people that way by just being like, yo, not every, like, Those stories are totally fine, but, like, not every story about trans people has to be about them overcoming it. There can be stories where they are just people, just like everybody else, and everyone recognizes that. And I hope that's hopeful, you know. So there you go.
Cool. I haven't got my recording timer thing that I usually use on Skype, so I have no idea how long I've been recording for.
I think it's been about 50 minutes.
Okay, cool. We should probably nudge towards the end then. I mean, one thing I really wanted to mention to the listeners more than anything is that your Patreon, you started to do a thing called Writer Wednesdays, which I've signed up for. It's $5. I'm really excited about it. It's very cool. So every Wednesday you discuss a writing topic or writing and publishing even.
Yeah. So I alluded to it briefly earlier, but I am trying to make it a series where I address people's specific and individual concerns. So for example, recently, the video that came out just yesterday, my Writer Wednesday video, is answering a specific question. One of the people who watches Writer Wednesday is like, I want to absorb what a bunch of different people are doing and like find what's best for me. And I turned that into a video about how to learn how to write. And it is basically my primer on, you can go and you can read Write on Writing by Stephen King and still not learn how to write. Right. And so I think that a lot of people place too much stock in certain ways of learning how to do things, whether it's writing or indie publishing. And so I made a video on like, you need to approach all of your learning from this angle. And that is the sort of thing that I want to keep doing in the videos, is to like make things that address specific things that the viewers are going through.
I'm really excited about it. It's almost like I love the level of interactivity with it. It's sort of like having a mentorship. I hope you don't mind me saying that, but I feel like
you're a mentor. I like it. Yeah.
Anyways. And it just seems very cool. And if people are out there and they want to, you know, not just listen to the same old podcasts, not just watch the same old videos, read the same old books, but have someone you can interact with in such a, not personal way, but the Patreon aren't massive, aren't they? So you've got like a smaller class set, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, trying to keep things sort of manageable so that I can give people like individual attention. And, you know, one thing that I was really hesitant on doing it is basically sort of putting it behind a paywall. And what really sort of swayed me was that I already had people supporting me on Patreon for $5 or more, and I wasn't doing enough for them. Like, a lot of them came and supported my YouTube channel because they liked my content about writing. And I still produce content about writing, but like, if people literally are supporting me because of that, like, I felt like I wasn't delivering enough in exchange for their support. And that's sort of the thinking behind it. And so, yeah, I really do want to help people. I don't just want it to be like more instruction. I want to be like, dude, are you a successful writer yet? No. Okay. Why not? And here's how to fix it. Like, that is literally what I want Writer Wednesday to be.
Yeah, it definitely does feel a lot more like you're able to just reach through the screen and just grab hold of the person. Because like you were saying earlier, it's a case of, especially in these situations, I'd rather speak one-on-one with a person than speak to just a room full of people who's, you know, well, I guess I'd speak to a room full of people, but people kind of that you can't see, that you can't relate to. So like you say, if you've already got people that are supporting you, it just makes complete sense to give them that extra and direct your conversations at them.
Exactly.
Yeah. Dan, so we are coming towards the end. Is there anything you wanted to ask Garrett before we wrap up and do the quick fire round? Garrett, I haven't told you about the quick fire round.
It's okay.
I think one of the things just briefly was the fact that, I mean, I've kind of, your work came to my attention probably close to a year ago now. And I keep an eye and I do follow regularly with the kind of stuff that you're doing, not in a like stalker way. But you tend to give a lot of stuff away for free. You tend to kind of, your ethos seems to be give the people a lot more than they expect, just really go above and beyond to give people that good customer experience. I was surprised when I signed up to your mailing list, the amount of free stuff that you do give away.
Right.
How does that work for you? I guess as an author model, in, I guess a lot of people wouldn't want to give a lot of stuff away in order to try and make stuff back. That doesn't make sense to them. How does that work for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's good and it works for me. I think that people who are hesitant to give away like a free book for signing up for an email list or something like that, like an actual full book, are for what I do, the business model, like it works as a business model, because I'm going to keep writing Underrealm books probably for the rest of my life. And when I'm done, there will be more Underrealm books, you know? So if I give somebody the first or even the first two books for free, there are still, six more books after that, and another one coming out in, you know, like February. So I'm not worried that I'm not getting as much of their money as I possibly can. And the other thing too is that the thing that you have to watch out for in giving things away for free, I've just changed this about my email list. So you know, if you signed up for it, that when you sign up for my email list, you get a series of introductory emails that sort of teach you about the books and like where they are and where they come from and all that sort of thing, and like what the point is behind it. And then also introduce you to like the correct order to read them so that you can buy them all. Like, I am trying to sell my books, right? Let's not pretend that that's not happening. But I recently just changed my first introductory email, and the change has been massive and great and wonderful. And I love the responses that I've been getting from people who sign up for it. My first email used to be, "Hey, welcome to the list. Here's your free book that you asked for. I hope, you know, I'm so excited that you're here and I can't wait to see you in the next email." And then they'd get the next email and a certain number of people would unsubscribe. And like, it just wasn't really like getting like the response that I wanted. My first email now says, "Hey, welcome. If you're reading this, it's because you wanted to get a free book. Here's your free book. There you go. Let's you and I be honest with each other. You're probably not going to read it." Everybody goes around and they get all these free books and they put them on their Kindle and they never read them. And you know what? If that's what you want to do, that's fine. I'm just saying that I really like people who like actually finish their books. So like, if you're an actual reader and you read it and you write me, I've got all this cool stuff that I want to give you, but like, you won't even think it's cool unless you're a reader. You'll only appreciate it if you're the type of person who actually reads books. So like, if you're like 90% of people, you're going to put it on your Kindle, you're going to read it sometime, and sometimes never going to happen. That's fine. You're happy, like, go on your way. You're great. But if you finish it, send me. And the amount of people who write me who are like, "No, I'm a reader. I'm such a reader. I like read your book in one sitting." So like, challenging people, you can give people stuff for free without being in like propitiation about it. Like, "Oh, here, please read my book." Like, you can challenge people and be like, "I've given it to you for free. Like, but are you just doing that?" So, you know, basically challenging them. Are you just building your library? You know, like people who like fill their bookshelves just so they look like they read, but they never actually do. Challenge them on it and be like, "Hey, I'm going to give you a free book. The least you could do is freaking read the thing, you know?" So
I've now got an image in my head of you just picking up one of your books, just in the middle of a hall, just you and one reader, and just going, "This is one of my books." Just handing it gently over and walking away. Going, "It's up to you. I don't care."
I do not care. Exactly.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's sort of the business model. And it is a little bit of like, you know, any good drug dealer knows. You give them the first sample for free. And if it's good stuff, they will keep coming back.
It's a much more friendlier approach than, like you say, that very kind of aggressive, "Here's my book. Read this. Because I've signed up for a few lists where I'll get an email every day for the first 2 weeks of, "Now I do this, and I've also got this, and I've also got this." And I'm like, "Come on, guy, give me a chance.
Bugger off." Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Gary, before we finish up, I just want to say thanks for coming on. Sorry for the Skype issues.
Oh, no problem. But
I really appreciate it. I think I remember emailing you a while back because you're a big inspiration to me and stuff I want to do. And I think possibly the same for Daniel as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you're constantly publishing, you're constantly building, and you're building a legacy publishing empire, like legacy. I said. it's good to see you, man. It's really inspirational. So thank you for that. But now, are you ready for the quick fire round?
Quickly, please.
I'm not, but isn't that the point?
Yes. So we're gonna throw some questions at you, and you've got like 5 seconds to answer them.
Okay. Oh, God. I'm not good at this. I'm just saying. Here we go.
The look of terror on our guests' faces when we tell them that they're going to do a quick fire round.
No one's ever ready.
Daniel, do you want to go first? Or do you want me to go first?
I'll shoot first.
Go for it.
Cool. Tolkien or George R. R. Martin?
Tolkien.
Beer or wine?
Beer.
Indiana Jones or James Bond?
Indiana Jones.
Favorite book?
Lord of the Rings.
Favorite word?
Quixotic. Love that word. Love it. Never get to use it.
Favorite liquid?
Beer.
Oh, alcoholic. See.
Okay. Twitter or Facebook?
Ooh, Twitter, but Facebook for advertising.
Spirit writer.
Spirit writer?
Like a spirit animal.
Spirit animal.
Oh, Tolkien. Yeah. Tolkien. Definitely Tolkien.
Final meal.
Steak and sushi.
What is your battle cry?
I would not enjoy myself going into battle. I'd be running forward to... Oh, no!
Read my book. Yeah. Great, okay. So this is the point where we start recording. I still don't know how to end these shows.
We got new links.
Oh, yes. Sorry. Yeah. So, Gary, is there anywhere you want to send people to?
Yeah, I have a personal website. If you care more about like my YouTube stuff and my stuff about writing and fantasy as opposed to the actual books. So that's Garrett, 2 R's, 2 T's, GarrettBRobinson.com. If you actually like the books, if you enjoy fantasy and you want to try the first book for free, you should go to underrealm.net. That's 2 R's, under and realm, both words pushed together, .net. You can find all the books there. You can evaluate the different series, see which one's right for you and all that sort of stuff.
Great. And Dan, where are we sending people to this week?
I'll probably do a shout out to, we are now running competitions for the next theme for the other stories, which when this airs will currently be closed, but keep an eye out at the beginning of each new theme as we will be pitting two themes against each other, and you can vote for them live on our Facebook at facebook.com/hawkandcleaver.
Great. Okay. Cheers, guys. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Garrett.
Thank you, guys.
We should end this on Garrett's blog. Bye.
Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Story Studio podcast. Still hungering for some podcast goodness? Then why not check out our other show, The Other Stories? Oh, and did you know, every time you leave us a review in the iTunes store, a puppy is born. Cute, eh? Anyway, toodle pip.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing and context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's GRAMMARLY.com/podcast. Easier said, done.